This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from TAN Talk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, I am happy to be back from New York City. Oh, it was an exciting adventure, and I will tell you all about it one day. At the bottom of this hour, I have a really great author on, New York Times bestselling author Dan Wetzel, and we're going to be talking about his new series for young people. It's called Epic Athletes, and he is a wonderful, wonderful, you know, there are many sports writers, and there are many sports commentators, but what I love about Dan is that he is committed to not just to helping children understand the world of sports, but also he is a man who will take a position. He's not there's nothing wishy-washy about Dan. And so I'm really excited that he's going to be on the program at the bottom of the hour. But right now I have somebody really special with me. And as all of you know, I am a Youper. I'm from northern Michigan. So nature is so important to me because I spent my entire childhood, especially the summers, really living wild. In the morning, we would take our Kool-Aid and our peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and we would head out to the woods or to the beach, and that was our entire day. So it's very important always for me to think about birds and animals and just running free. And so I'm happy that today Vernon LaVia is with me, and we are going to talk about Make Earth Great Again. It's his new book, and it's Earth Avoidance and our Disappearing Connection with Nature. Wow, Vernon.
Hi, Patsy.
Oh, wow.
Thanks for having me on today.
This is a fascinating book. You have taken so many things from your own experience and put it all together in a book, and actually now starting a movement to make the Earth better.
Yes, the Mega Movement, M-E-G-A, Make Earth Great Again, .org.
.org. Well, I think it's just fascinating. So tell us a little bit about your background. As you mentioned, you are a world traveler. You've seen so much of the world, and with all of the things that you've done, you've put all these ideas together and come out with some really brilliant observations.
Well, thank you for saying that. It is a perspective. We all have unique perspectives, right? My perspective is founded in the fact that I have opened 19 corporations after spending 15 years as an officer at three different Fortune 100 companies. I've crammed that together with my 48 years of birdwatching on six continents, 49 countries, all 50 states, all provinces of Canada. And so the whole premise of this book comes from the language of consumerism is engulfing and totally taking over the language of nature. And that's the premise here.
And you've seen, as you're out there with the birds and enjoying the beauty of it, enjoying the beauty of nature, you've seen so the creeping effect of what's happening in the world,
right,
and changing this beautiful nature.
Right. The thing about birds, number one hobby in America, by the way, according to 104 million surveys done by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, 45 million checked the box for bird watching, compared to only 36 million for fishing and 11 million for hunting. The number one reason Americans use the outdoors is bird watching. The National Audubon Society has a saying, protect the birds and we protect the earth. That's because there's birds in the bottom of the desert to the top of the mountain. You can't say that about butterflies or salamanders. You protect the birds and you will protect the earth and thereby protect ourselves.
So what started you on this quest first? Let's talk a little bit about the birds because it's very meaningful. It comes from your father?
Yes, my father became a bird watcher as a fluke. His father had died, left a pair of binoculars, which he never used before. And my father was an English professor for about 34 years. My mom, a reading teacher. So I come from teachers. And I'm a substitute teacher of 16 years myself. But my father took up this pair of binoculars one day when he was teaching at Maryland, University of Maryland. And he went walking on the CNO Canal. And these four or five guys saw him and walked over to him. They turned out to be members of the Washington, D.C. Audubon Society. He didn't know such a thing existed. And they pointed to a tree that had three of the most beautifully colored birds in them. My dad was a Shakespearean expert, world-renowned. And he commented that, boy, even Shakespeare's words didn't do justice when you see this kind of beauty in a tree. It was a Baltimore Oriole that he saw, a scarlet tanager, and a blue jay, all in the same tree.
Oh, wow.
And it just exploded on him, this possibility of what could happen if he went down the road of being a bird watcher. So he did. So I, starting at age four, helped become his eyes and ears. So did my brother. And as a result, it is just part of our DNA that we spent 12 straight years, the last day of school, we jumped in a VW van and traveled this great country for 40 to 60 days for 12 straight years. And we even zigzagged all the way down to Mexico and the Panama border. And we even went all the way up into Canada and part of the halfway up the Alaskan Highway. We were adventurers, and that's what's been instilled in me. And what I've seen occur in just this past 40 years, I started recognizing 10 years ago that certain birds, like the red-eyed vireo, had been halved in numbers, 40, 50% gone. Some birds, 80%, the bobwhite quail, at least 80% gone. And I had a suspicion. Well, in 2016, the study came out by National Audubon exactly with those numbers on a whole big list of birds.
Well, you know, my brother still lives up in northern Michigan, and there was this push for everybody to put up windmills.
Mm.
He has the original 40 acres that my grandparents got when they came from Finland in 1903, I think it was, and then added a few other 40 acres. So he's got a nice big piece of land there, and they were trying to convince him, oh, put up the windmills. You know, you won't see them. They'll be far enough away from you. You won't even hear them, although he didn't believe that. Mm-hmm. But for him, I think it was the idea that the birds that he loves, because, as I said, he's, you know, he had been also in corporate world for many years and had just traveled all over the world. And then at one point, he and his wife said, why? We have this beautiful land. Let's go and live up there. And that's what they did. And so his thought, I don't want to kill the birds. He loves watching the birds.
Yeah. And I get that. So, you know, we could talk a long time just about that issue. What we fail to realize is what are the other options, such as coal-fired plants, what are they doing as the birds are dropping out of the sky, literally?
Yes.
In my book, there's an article in Australia about 5,000 birds dropping out of the sky. Never determined how, why, what caused it. Maybe they flew through some kind of poisonous plume that was released in the middle of the night by a corporation. They have no idea. But the point is, I'm not against windmills. Windmills are kind of, you asked me to talk about the passenger pigeon. The passenger pigeon was once the most populous bird on the planet with 5 billion. I spent most of my life thinking they were hunted and shot to extinction.
That's what I thought.
Not even close. The issue is that we cut down their forests, both in their breeding grounds along the Ohio Valley, it was called then, and in their wintering grounds along the Gulf, Louisiana and Mississippi. We cut those down for the woods to build a navy. Because we're going back to like the War of 1812, and afterwards we decided to build a navy and be the biggest navy in the world. We built forts all out of wood. The cities that surrounded the forts became all out of wood. We cut down forests just so Indians couldn't hide in them. And I say Indians because that's the term of their time back then. And they didn't want them hiding. They would cut down 5 square miles of forest around the fort just to make it so Indians can't surprise them. The passenger pigeon was absolutely faced its demise because of the destruction of both of its breeding ground and its wintering ground, which was its food sources and its breeding source. The hunting was just the last little tip of the iceberg to push it over after it was no longer able to replenish itself through natural processes. The windmill is today's exact example. The windmill today is the hunter of the passenger pigeon of the past days. The birds could absolutely replenish themselves if we weren't cutting down their wintering rainforests in Central and South America, and if we weren't cutting down or polluting their breeding grounds, which are most of Canada and the northern United States. So this is you have to sort of weigh, in my opinion, what I've discovered is just as many birds will die from the secret gases of coal and oil versus windmills. But I think it's more important to get off of coal and oil and get to something that will help us survive for a longer time as a species.
So what do you recommend?
Well, I think all of the alternative energies are the next great boom economically. And I remember, I have an economics degree from Duke University, and I've opened 19 companies and worked at three Fortune 100 companies. I can speak to this with some opinion that should be credible, right? And I've also have the 48 years in nature. I believe as quickly as possible, this should be a nonpartisan issue to create millions of jobs to get into all forms of the alternative energies. Most scientists believe there is an ice age coming. It's been predicted since the late 1700s to be somewhere between 1,500 years out and 50,000 years out. We won't have easy access to the current forms of energy. We do need to get into the solar and the wind and geothermal, the things that will get humans through the next ice age. That is pretty irrefutable that they believe is coming, and it's just a natural part of the process of the Earth. We might be speeding it up. That's the true debate that's going on right now in the world, is are we speeding that up? But you line up 100 scientists, and at least 90 are going to tell you, the best science tells us there is an ice age coming. We just have no idea when. We can narrow it down in about a 49,000 year period. And that's the best they can do.
Well, it is a complicated problem.
It is.
And it would be nice if everybody would get together on it. But that's part of the problem, that, say, even in America, we have these things that happen with coal fired. But if America takes care of some of the problem, we have all the rest of the world. And it is so sad that we cannot get everybody together on this. And I guess that's part of your organization, of trying to get not just America, but all the countries in line.
Yeah, the megamovement.org is about breaking down the stovepipes of organizations. I've been a member of lots of things. I'm a current member of Sierra Club. I've been a World Wildlife Fund, Greenpeace, all kinds of organizations, the Delaware Valley Ornithological Club, the Chicago Ornithological Society, National Audubon. The list goes on and on. And we are all stovepiped. We aren't talking to each other.
No.
And in fact, we're actually in agreement 80% of the time, but we spend our time arguing over the 20%. Windmills. Why do we spend, well, all these organizations, for instance, can agree that what we're doing is deadly. Let's talk about asthmatic children and how many die from coal-fired plant issues. In my town, several die per year in our local hospital from asthmatic attacks. How can that not become a bipartisan issue directly related to the fact that we know what's deadly in our air? And let's stop talking about it in relation to polar bears.
Yeah.
It's not about the polar bear. It's about our oxygen. And my book really points that out, that it's not about the spotted owl or the polar bear or the salmon or the white-nosed bat disease. And I could go on and on. It's about our human oxygen and clean water.
Clean water is so...
Those are the two issues that it's about.
You know, having grown up on Lake Superior, and in those days, of course, we were never afraid of fishing or eating the fish out of the water.
Mm.
It was just... But today, even in Lake Superior, as vast as it is, we have problems. We worry about it. And, of course, you know, it's no matter what we do, whether we were blaming Canada for dumping a lot of stuff into Lake Superior or Minnesota, it's a tragedy that we are not keeping our water clean.
Right. It is what it's about. My book points out 26 dots that I connect. Remember our children books, Connect the Dots? My parents always bought me the ones that you couldn't tell what the picture was going to be. They bought the difficult ones.
Yeah,
and then
like
my
those.
Wife and I did that for our two daughters, Veronica and Jackie. Well, I connect the dots in the premise that people can't speak the language of nature. I've chosen just 26 issues in the world, mostly present, some past, so to help people connect the dots. And the 26th dot, spoiler alert, is phytoplankton, which even science teachers forgot about. And they told me, oh, Vern, it's a single-cell animal. No, it's a single-celled plant by the trillions out in the deep seas. And when they bloom, they provide 50 to 80% of human oxygen. And the numbers of plankton, phytoplankton, are down 20% by some reports and 40% by others. Now, knee-jerk reaction is to say, it's our garbage. We all know about the massive floating garbage that's three times the size of France. That's everywhere on the internet. Yes, the garbage is a part of it. Yes, styrofoam is a part of it. But they also need fish poop to survive in the process of a plant growing in water. And all large fish right now, in the last 50 years, since the time we walked on the moon, we have eliminated 90% of fish 4 feet or long or larger. That's bluefin tuna, that's sharks, that's porpoises, whales or mammals, so including whales. Without all that fish poop, it is, and the garbage, and the slight half-degree temperature of the ocean rising, those are killing our phytoplankton. It's about our oxygen. It is not about polar bears. And that's what's so hard for people to grasp, because the polar bear has fur and eyes, and we want to embrace it. And then it causes arguments. What does it really matter, the polar bear? And that gets us nowhere. If 30 or 40% of society doesn't care about the polar bear, shouldn't they care about our oxygen? Dead asthmatic children in emergency rooms across America? Isn't that something that we can all just say, we can do better?
And,
we have great ingenuity.
And water contaminated with drugs. I had an experience that I found really shocking. At one point, my husband had had some surgery, and they gave him different pills, and then he didn't need them. And I had like three bottles of pills, and I didn't want to throw them in the garbage. I didn't want to, I didn't know what to do with them. So I called the doctor. I said, is there place I can bring pills that we don't need, and you destroy them? And the doctor, like, what? No, right. never even thought about it. And as a matter of fact, I told him at one point, I said, you ordered 90 of each of the pills, and he would never have needed 90 in the first place. A few. And I said, so I've got all these pill bottles full. So he said, no. So I went to the pharmacy. I said, I drove up to the pharmacy window. I said, look, what can I do? Do you have a disposal method to get rid of these pills? And they said, oh, no, we can't do that. We could never do that. You can't do that. Just flush them down the toilet, they said.
Yes.
And I said, no, I can't do that. I'm from northern Michigan. I think about things like dumping, chemicals down into the water. I think of the fish because I love trout. Oh, I love trout so much.
Amen.
coming from northern Michigan, we ate so much fish. That was a major part of our diet. And the thought of, finally they said, well, if you take it to the police department will get rid of it. And I said, what are they going to do with it? And they said, dump it down the toilet.
Hmm. How do we just skip along as a society when for over two decades the USDA has told pregnant women to either not eat fish or to eat very limited amounts? I think it's something like 4 ounces a week. We have lost the language of nature if we can't draw a direct line and connect just two dots that says they don't want you to eat fish because it's contaminated with stuff that can kill your baby or cause brain damage.
Exactly.
Or ADHD or any number of things. How do we just skip along with two decades of telling pregnant women of not eating fish and think everything's fine?
Well, in all your research, have you discovered a way that people should get rid of drugs?
Yes. So when you say get rid of drugs,
extra drugs they have
absolutely.
In their medicine cabinet.
Many communities around, including my hometown of Aurora, Illinois, have multiple drop sites. Now, what they do with it is incinerate it. So I don't know if there's enough studies or science on incinerating it. How much better? What is the marginal benefit? I do have an opinion that the marginal benefit is better than putting it out of drinking water. I have a chapter in my book called Water Made America Great. And if you look at the history of water, we really did get it right, starting right after the War of 1812, when we realized that our advancing humans by train and everything were just killing ourselves, killing Native Americans. We were polluting our water, and we got serious about it, and water made us great. But today, my book lists 35 elements, 35 things found in post-treated municipal water. And these things were found by major newspaper discoverers, you know, investigative reporters in the water. So yes, all around you need to look for your police, your fire, your water reclamation districts usually will have some kind of drop box now for your prescription drugs to keep them out of the water.
Well, we hope so, because your book is so fascinating. You have so many, I know that I'm going to just enjoy going back and really learning and being able to talk to people about some of this. And it's called Make Earth Great Again, and it's part of mega.org. And the author is Vernon LaVia. And Vernon, I've already told you that I didn't have enough time with you today. You know, you're here in town, and I wanted to grab you while you're here.
Thank you.
But you're going to be back in town.
I will be.
And soon, and all you have to do is let me know your schedule.
Thank you.
And I want you back here, and we're going to talk about more of the things that you've learned, and also about your exciting travels to six continents.
Yes.
And before we leave, will you do a few bird calls for me?
That was the house finch. One more, the screech owl.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's fantastic.
Thank you, Patsy. You're the best.
I've had a professor do Latin poetry, and now Vernon LaVia has done bird calls, and he's going to come back, and he's going to maybe pick a few from northern Michigan for me. Right?
Will do.
Okay. And everybody, get this book. It's wonderful.
It's a fast, easy read, by the way.
It's fast, easy, but it's a book that I know you're going to go back to many times. And it's going to be a subject, a conversation with all of your friends. So it's called Make Earth Great Again, and available where books are sold.
It's on Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble, you name it, online.
Okay. Well, again, Vernon, thank you so much for being here on Joy on Paper.
Thank you,
Patsy. It's been an absolute joy to meet you and to talk to you.
Thank you for what you do. It's important to keep the written word alive. If you write it, it is real forever.
That's it. Okay. Thank you again. Bye-bye now. We're going to go to commercial.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660. Or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with the Z, and I am back, and I'm just going to talk to you a little bit about my trip to New York City. As I'm waiting here to talk to Dan Wetzel, who is not only a New York Times bestselling author, he has been the Yahoo Sports national columnist since 2003. He's a fantastic author, and I'm really excited that he's on the program today because this is the beginning of the summer, and I want to encourage all of you, if you have young people in your life, make sure that you do everything you can so that they will read this summer. Summer is, I have spoken to so many teachers who say that the kids don't read during the summer, and by the time they get back to school in the fall, they forgot what they learned in the spring. So it's vital that you just get books in the hands of kids. And if you want to get really great books, you're going to get Dan Wetzel's series, a new series called Epic Athletes. Hi, Dan.
Hey, how are you?
Wow.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's an honor for me to have you on because I so admire you. I admire your books, this wonderful new series of Epic Athletes done for young readers so that we can encourage them to read and just to find the joy of reading and also to find the joy of sports. But also because I admire that you are a New York Times bestselling author, but you are also a man of principle. And in so many cases in your life, you have stood up and just done the right thing when it comes to different events in sports. So I really admire your work.
Well, thank you very much. That's very, very kind. Thanks for reading through the years.
Yes. Well, you know, I'm a baseball person. Unfortunately, the team that I have always followed is the Detroit Tigers.
there you go.
Because I'm from Michigan. What can I do? I can't stop myself. My dad was
not so good right now.
No kidding.
He'll be back.
We hope that someday, you know, we have to start singing as someday, you know, our dreams will come true.
If the Cubs can do it, anyone can do it.
Yeah, that's true. So I every year I get in there all enthusiastic, but that losing streak was a bit over long. Wow. I love this new series, and I think that what you've come out with is you can explain what it is, but it's so wonderful that this Epic Athletes, and it's done, you know, with the heart. It's done with so much joy. I found, you know, I was as I'm reading the books, and I have the first two, Alex Morgan and Stephen Curry, and I was thinking, whoa, Dan just had so much fun writing these books.
I really did. You know, we're trying to do inspiring athletes. Stephen Curry, Alex Morgan, we have more coming, Tom Brady, Serena Williams, LeBron James, Lionel Messi, the great soccer player, all the different, just some great athletes. But it's really, you know, all our kids are dominated by screen time, Fortnite, video games, all the different things. And not every kid is into reading, or they like it a little, but there wasn't really a market for them. Not everyone's into fantasy or comic books or things like that. So what I wanted to do is bring back the kind of classic 100-plus page, middle school sort of focused sports bio and say, look, maybe your son isn't into this type of book, but he's willing to say, hey, look, Steph Curry, I like Steph Curry. I watched him last night, scored 37 points in a game. I'll read about him. The Women's World Cup's coming up. Alex Morgan's going to be a huge star. Or I like Tom Brady. I'm a football fan. And sort of the books that a lot of us grew up reading that, for whatever reason, the publishers kind of got away from. There's a lot for little kids, and there's a lot for adults, but there just isn't in that age group. And so we found the athletes who are not only great, but have kind of universal messages. Steph was always too small. When he was growing up, nobody thought he was going to be an NBA superstar. When he's 11, he barely made his teams because everyone said, you're too short, you're too skinny. Alex Morgan was cut from her travel soccer team at 13. How did she deal with that? She didn't just quit soccer or get down. She rededicated herself and became the leading scorer for the United States women's soccer team. Just universal message. Serena Williams, obviously incredible talent. She grew up in her sister's shadow. Everyone talked about Venus, Venus, Venus. Oh, you're the other sister. Well, you don't have to play tennis to know what that's like. You just need to be a younger sibling. So there's so many really great messages of perseverance, of self-dedication, and different things. And it's all in a package with a lot of sports that we found a lot of kids, particularly ones that aren't just running to the library to read tons of books, have really gotten into. And that's really the most rewarding thing. It's one thing to get a kid to read a book, and that's hard enough. It's really exciting when you get a kid who doesn't really like to read a book.
And with your books, they certainly will enjoy it, because it's so funny. I'm reading the Alex Morgan book, and I know the outcome. I know the outcome of the game that you start with. I mean, I remember watching it, and I remember at the time I was so excited. This is of course a 2012 semifinals for the 2012 London Olympics. I was so excited. I had lived in England, so I'm very familiar with Manchester, and I knew the stadium. I knew all, but the way you write it, it's like it's as good as any you know thriller writer, because you're writing this so passionately and with so much excitement. I mean, it was taking my breath away. I'm like, whoa. I hope she's going to do it. I mean, I knew she was going to, but I was so carried away with your writing. I thought, wow, this is one heck of a writer.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, well, they're exciting, and they should be exciting. And it should be something that grabs you and makes you feel like you're rooting for her. And one thing you do have to remember, what I've learned when writing for this audience, is they don't remember. If you're 11 and you're reading this book, you probably didn't watch the 2012 Olympics. You would have been whatever, three.
Yeah, you don't know it, and so
that's... you may not know what happened in that game, but it's a great game. But you do know Alex Morgan, and you do love the women's national team, or you just love the Olympics, or just the story of these people that persevere. So. We do have a lot of the great games they play in and the series and all the things that make them, you know, so popular. But we also really focus on the lessons of when they were of the same age as presumably the reader. What was it like in eighth grade? What were they like in seventh grade? Different things that happened in their life. It's not all perfect. They have to move. They didn't make a team. Their parents got divorced. Stuff that happens. And how did they deal with it? And so there's a lot of just great lessons. There are a lot more like you than you think. Now you look and see Tom Brady and say, gosh, this guy, six Super Bowls, and I follow him on Instagram, and everything's perfect. And you go, yeah, actually, when he was a freshman in high school, he never played a single snap on his freshman football team. He was the backup and never got in a game. And rather than get discouraged, he said, I'm going to work harder. And now, look, a lot of kids who never get in the game as a freshman are not going to turn out to be Super Bowl champions six times over. But he maximized his potential. And I think that's all we want out of any of our kids, is whatever their potential is, try to maximize it, be focused on it, steer a clear path. So there's just a lot of great, lessons. It's been a lot of fun to write. It's been a lot of fun to get that response. There's a part, I had some kids, a girl came up to me who had read the Stephen Curry book, and she goes, I was so sad at one part when his college team, Davidson, didn't win the NCAA championship. And they have a great run in the book, but it's funny because I was like, I can't believe anyone ever thought Davidson would win the NCAA championship. You have to remember, she's 11. But the fact that she was just rooting for the school as she's reading the book was really, really great. So it's been fun. It's been fun hearing the parents talk about, you know, I got an email the other day from a dad. He just said, I walk in my house and it's dead silent. I walk in the living room. I go, what are you doing? And my son's sitting there and goes, I'm reading a book. What do you gave me the book? So that's really the rewarding part for me and for all of us.
Well, as I said, this has to be one of the best jobs in the world. That you, first of all, that you get to be involved with sports at all, and then that you get to know these people and then now write these wonderful books. And It is important. It is a wonderful thing when you see children just so into a book, and they don't know exactly, you know, what it is that's taking them into that book, but they have that feeling of excitement that they just cannot get from games they play with their two thumbs. I mean, it's just, you know, I'm sure too also, you know, for example, the book about Alex, I think a lot of young people will say, well, you know, I've been looking, and, you know, I'm in school, I'm 11 years old, and I've been thinking sort of, sports are stupid, and why should I do it? And then you see how much joy she finds in getting a goal, my goodness, that maybe, you know, more people, young people will participate in sports, which they really need to do, and get away from these electronic toys and their cell phones.
Yeah, hopefully it does. Yeah, go join a basketball team. Go join a soccer team. You know, they're always looking for players. These rec leagues, and she played a very low level of soccer until she was 13. Was really just playing. Her dad coached her local rec team in Diamond Bar, California, and she just was happy playing with her friends. And then eventually she kind of transitioned up because she was so good. But she wasn't chasing, trying to be the greatest player in the world as a little kid. She was just having fun. They all play different sports. Alex played track and basketball and volleyball, and, you know, just had a life of that while getting great grades to get into the University of California. So, there's a lot of really good lessons. So it was really a combination of how do we hook kids and then how do we give them something.
Well,
they know these athletes but you know them through Instagram, you know, through social media. It's all polished, it's all perfect, and they're not perfect. And that's actually the best part of their stories, is everything isn't perfect. Because I think every one of us, all of us, particularly our children, sit there and go, God, I'm not as good as this. And you never will be as good as that. That's not a real world. This is the real world. And really, Alex Morgan isn't the perfect thing that you see on social media. She's this product of a lot of work and a humble, humble growth through the years.
Well, I love the illustrations. I think it really adds and enhances the book so much. And I think Henry Holt and Company have done a great job in putting together the illustrations to go with your story, because they're fun, and they're some of them. Boy, when she hits that soccer ball with her head.
Yeah, it's a great picture, isn't it?
Well, it's so funny. By the time I finish this book, I don't know. I want to play soccer now. You know, when I was a kid, we didn't play soccer. We played baseball. I'm thinking, I want to go.
You'll be ready for the World Cup.
I'm thinking, I don't know if there are any, let's not say senior soccer ladies team, but I think
under whatever,
yeah, but I'm thinking we need to get a neighborhood soccer game going, because just, you know, reading about how she did it and the excitement that you put into this book, I thought, I need to kick that soccer ball. that's a sign that an author has really captured an audience, when you can get somebody, you know, adult who's reading a children's book. I mean, I wasn't thinking at all that it was a children's book. I'm right into this book, just like anybody. And I thought, wow, as I was going along, I was thinking, you know, I'm sure you're going to write many, many books in your life, but this is a wonderful series, and it's so, I think the choices are wonderful, and so far there are eight in the series? Tom Brady, LeBron?
Eight coming, yes.
Yeah,
yep.
And they're...
Yeah, they're going to keep coming out over the next, you know, 6-8 months.
Yeah, okay, I mean, I actually, I love...
Perfect for summer reading, perfect for book reports, you know, it's... You know, the Who Was books are very good, but they're very dry. They're very just fact. This is really more narrative-based. And I think it catches kids in a different way and inspires them and gets them reading in a different way.
And, you know, I mean, I love soccer, but I had never thought of it for example, for myself until I read this book. And then I'm thinking, I can do that. I want to try it. You know, I do love soccer. As I said, I lived in England for quite a few years, and I'm like really crazy about Harry Kane. But you get to go to all these places. Wow, isn't it exciting life?
It is. I work for Yahoo Sports, and I covered almost all these guys for a long time. So it's a very, very fun job, and it's been fun to kind of fold this project into that. Because I had all these stories. I knew all these people. I had them all, and it's kind of repackaging a lot of it into something designed for a different audience than I write for on a typical basis.
So when you were doing these particular books, you went back and interviewed?
I took time to, you know, sometimes we talk to the athletes. A lot was focused on, you know, what their high school coach have to say. What did their seventh grade coach have to say? You get, you know, great stories, not necessarily from the athlete, but from other people. There's a great part in the Steph Curry book. One of my favorite stories we came up with was he and his brother Seth, they played each other in the Western Conference NBA Finals this week. So he's an NBA player also. They moved because their dad moved to Toronto, started playing in Toronto. So they moved to Toronto, and for 1 year, they entered this small Christian school that had a really really bad basketball team. They lost every single game the year before. This was middle school basketball, and everybody makes the team. You know, just a nothing team. Well, they add Steph and Seth Curry, and they immediately start beating everybody by 30 points and win the league. And you know, the guys who are on that team tell these just great stories of, it's almost like every kid's fantasy on a bad team, is you're sitting there going, gosh, we stink. And it's like, oh, two future NBA players just joined our team and now we're gonna murder everybody. This is great. So there's just fun stories like that. But you get great. I don't think Steph Curry looks at it the same way as the kids on the team did, right? He probably doesn't even remember it like that. He's like, oh, yeah, we played, we won. But the guys on the team are like, this is unbelievable. I tell people all the time, I was Steph Curry's teammate, you know, and they look at me like I'm crazy, but it's true. So there's just so many fun stories from youth. And most of the games at the beginning or late I covered. I was at that Alex Morgan game or the one that starts Steph thing against the Cleveland Cavaliers. But it's just, again, it's an accumulation of a lot of reporting. You know, we wanted to focus not just on male athletes, but female athletes. And not just because there's so many girls now that are into sports or sports obsessed, because boys and girls can root for, there's just as many girls Steph Curry fans as there are boys. But, you know, to show that, you know, people like Alex Morgan or Simone Biles is coming, the gymnast, or Serena Williams are inspirational too, and their journey. It doesn't matter whether you're a boy or girl or man or woman. It's the work you put in to become great.
Well, the Steph Curry book is great. Now I have to admit, I don't know basketball. And it was really, for me, it was like a lesson here, because, as I said, I was always baseball. As a matter of fact, I always got straight A's in school. Except I one time got a D because the physical ed teacher wanted me to. I learned how to play baseball from my mother, who in World War II played proper baseball, you know, hitting the ball the right way, not this underhanded nonsense. And so I learned how to pitch, and I hit a ball, and I refused to you know, pitch underhanded for a girl's game, and the teacher gave me a D, which was the only D I ever received in you know.
Well, that's no longer the case anymore.
Yeah, because I said, pitch like a guy. That's what I told her. I told her, and she said, yeah, and she gave me a D. Oh well, you know. So, but it is wonderful that you're writing these. There will be more. There's going to be more in this series someday down the line.
Hopefully, yeah. Well, there'll be Tom Brady and Serena Williams.
Well, I know in this, the first eight, but I'm sure there's going to be another eight, because there are so many athletes and so many who really can inspire young people. They're, you know, sometimes right. we only hear about the bad ones or you know, things in the news, but there are so many who have done so much and really care about youth and really want people to, you know, young people to do the best and to really think about the essence of sports, which is really sportsmanship and learning to work together and learning to share and learning to work as a team. And I'm really grateful for these books. I think they've done a wonderful job of bringing you into, if when they were choosing a writer for this series, they chose the right person because you have done a brilliant job. As I said, you write like a thriller writer. So I expect someday you're going to write a sport thriller book because you are an exciting writer.
All right. Well, we'll see. Thank you so much for having me on. It's extremely kind words and spreading the word about this book.
Well, everybody, the first two books are available wherever books are sold. I'm sure they're also, I'm sure that Barnes & Noble has them on their shelf, and they're by Dan Wetzel. And the first two in the series of epic athletes are Stephen Curry and Alex Morgan. And they are wonderful books, and the entire family will enjoy them. Either younger kids will start by looking at the pictures, the older kids will just read them, and the adults will steal them because they're lots of fun to read. Okay?
Hope so.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dan. Really enjoyed it. Okay. Wow. He is good. What a writer. I'm telling you, this guy could write a thriller. I was... Every, you know, when you're writing about a game, you have, and particularly because I knew the outcome of all of Alex Morgan games, that he writes with such a feeling of excitement and enjoyment. I couldn't put that book down. I was reading it nonstop because it was just, it's so beautifully written. So I'm really happy that Dan was on. And these first two books are just came out here in May, and the next two books will be coming out in August, and I will try to have him back so we can talk about the next books. An excellent, excellent writer. Okay, everybody. Well, just a few minutes. I want to tell you about my trip to New York City. Woo! I tell you, I met some really great authors while I was there. Had a little bit of time in the lobby of the Algonquin Hotel, which is the hotel for writers. If you are interested in the history of writers, American authors, the Algonquin Hotel is the sort of the hotel that every writer who's ever really every writer just has to go to, if not staying in the hotel, at least to the lobby of the Algonquin Hotel. It was really wonderful, and I want to thank the management of the hotel who let me actually set up office in the lobby because I didn't stay in the hotel, but I did set up a sort of a corner office there at the Algonquins to meet people because it is such a beautiful atmosphere. And I particularly want to thank Freshia, who was at the front desk, and also Fred, who was the waiter. And he was always so wonderful to me. And I really want to thank everybody there at the Algonquin for being so, so very, very kind to me. And it was a really wonderful thing for me to be able to be there. Now, I've got, I've got so many things coming up. One of the things is David Baldacci is coming back on. In July, he has another new book, and it's really something different and very, very exciting. So this is going to be his seventh visit to Joy on Paper, and I'm really excited about that. But I do want to again mention Make Earth Great Again, mega.org. I really enjoy talking to Vernon LaVia. He is a fascinating man, and the book is, you know, it is one that you're going to read it once and you're going to say, I've thought about this, and I'm glad that somebody has finally put it down on paper. And let's now sort of use this book as a guideline of how we're going to start looking at the environment and what we can do. He has a lot of suggestions in there, and I hope that you will get this book, and it's I just found it absolutely fascinating. Also, I've got Rita Moreau is coming up. She's got a new book, The House on Zinnia, and she's going to be here. And as you know, she does the book buzzes, but we're going to be talking to her about her new release. And it's a fourth in her series. And I'm always so excited for an author when they really, you know, put together a series and they've followed along with their characters and built them up over a period of time. And Rita has done a beautiful job with the Mary Catherine Mahoney series. And so I'm really looking forward to having her here. And again, I want to tell everyone, if you are looking for an agent, please go to Publishers Weekly. And that is where you will find the literary agents who are active and who are getting some really big contracts for their authors. So that's the place to go. And meanwhile, I want just to remind everyone that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book or to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. And your book will be turned into a film, a streaming video, or maybe a television series. And also, I want just to remind you, you can go to my website, which is radio-joyonpaper.com. I'm going to post quite a few of the interviews that I've had during the past week. I've been a little behind for all of you authors who have asked me, well, where's my interview? The trip to New York took up a lot of my time, but your interviews will be up and also the interviews today so that you can listen to them and share them on your social media and also support the authors who I talk to, because as I discovered in New York, authors really have a short period of time to promote their books, especially the big authors. It's funny, the big authors have even more limited time than the indie authors, because the books come out and the publishers say, you have 4 weeks to sell these books and then that's it. And I just want to make sure that you go to my webpage. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. It's been just a wonderful and exciting time for me, and I look forward to having many, many exciting literary agents on during the summer to help you get your ideas on how to publish your book. Anyway, bye-bye now.